the one dressing all gold and black. You better retreat, cause we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome to episode 332. That's 332. It's the ENS Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Judah, delighted to be joined by Wolverhampton Wanderers extraordinaire for the Express and Star, Mr. Liam Keane. Liam, come in. Liam, are you there?
You've been replaced by an AI robot.
I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do it. I'm still in mourning. I don't want to. I can't be up. I can't get excited.
You know what? We've experienced what we did at the weekend. You know, everyone's excited for a new podcast, lift the spirits, and they're straight back down again.
They're adjusting their volume levels. Like what? What's going on here? Oh dear. Well, at least I don't have to do a barbecue. Welcome to the ENS 332. It's 332. It's the ENS Wolves podcast, and I've got a couple of grand in my pocket, more than I thought I was going to do with a little bit of a Wembley trip. Liam Keane, doesn't matter. I'm going to be losing it anyway when we get into Europe, so it's all good. We've got an interesting podcast to come, but it's difficult for me to. I mean, I understand. People who are still down in the dumps. I'm still down in the dumps. And you're kind of over it a little bit. I'll pose a question to you, Mr. Liam Keane. Worse feeling full-time in that Coventry game on Saturday or losing to Watford in the semi-final?
Oh, it's a tough one, that, you know.
I mean, I think... At first I thought Watford, and to be honest... I might have changed my opinion. I think I felt worse after that Coventry game. Because at least they had the experience of Wembley. I know should have won Delafeo or the substitutions. Jota, devastated. FA Cup final would have been unbelievable. They'd have lost to City, but, you know, whatever. But to be so close after being so far away and the way that the season has gone and they've overcome every single bit of adversity... It just felt like the script was written. And I think it was more shock and just utter... I was just stunned. I was like white. I couldn't quite believe it had happened. I was just stuck to my seat. I think the culmination of everything and all the emotions in and around those last, what was it, 88 plus injury was too hard to process. It took me a long time, and I think I still am processing it.
I think the Coventry one's worse. I think I agree. I was there for the Watford one, but obviously I wasn't the Wolves reporter at the time. I wasn't on the sports desk at the time.
You didn't get a freebie ticket?
Well, I did, but I was there on a news capacity.
Wow, and you had news in inverted commas capacity.
You should remember, because I was sat just along from you, and you had no idea who I was.
No idea who you were, mate. I don't pay attention to work expos.
Well, mate, not a chance. And I was there purely in a sort of fan perspective at that time, and it was not great. But considering that we were getting excited, covering the club, the fact that I had the opportunity potentially to go cover a semi-final at Wembley, a FA Cup semi-final, we had a bit of a weekend plan.
I or we? Well, there's a lot of I going on here, Keno.
No, because I'm talking about my career. Me
specifically. Let's talk about your career. Let's talk about your career. Let's take how you can further yourself. Come on, let's talk about you. Come on.
No, listen, Lee. Let me explain. You've got to think about this selfishly from that point of view. Shock. That was what I wanted. Then, on top of that, having Wolves at Wembley, we had a little weekend planned, maybe a couple of pints here and there. Who knows what could have happened?
Oh, it would have been a scary, could have happened.
Nasty, horrible weekend.
Wow, what crikey.
And instead, we're preparing for Arsenal at home.
Arsenal at home. Oh, mate. I can't believe... I genuinely can't believe it. I'm sorry if you've tuned into this podcast and like want to be uplifted. I'm sure you will be at some point. But it was a bizarre game of football. Look, let's be honest. I mean, I think the XG was like 4-2 Coventry in the end. And I think that was... Wolves should have been lost that game a long time ago. If it wasn't for Sarr and everything that was going on, and Wolves were kind of throwing caution to the wind. But yeah, we won't be dissecting it too much. But I have got some kind of like opinions that I want to discuss with you. One being, I'm still stunned at that game management towards the end of that game to get themselves in that position. It should have been Hugo Bueno's best moment of his career, that goal with Aitnouri. That roar, albeit it was an afternoon kickoff, wish it was a night one, but it was an afternoon kickoff, kind of gave me feels to Jota in the Man United game. You got that kind of incredible eruption of emotion that I haven't heard for a long time. And then I look at that goal and I'm thinking, what is he doing at the back post? I mean, Simmons has literally got 2 yards on him. And whether it's the emotion of the whole, of the goal, and he switched off, but that can't happen in a Premier, and to a Premier League side. It cannot happen. And then Lamina giving the ball away, which is so unlike him. I mean, it's just, I was crestfallen. I'm sure the fans were crestfallen. And the problem now is, well, you can give your opinion on those, I guess, key issues, but also how this team recover, because it's not like everyone's back at the training ground now at Compton, and you know, you've got 20 guys there and Gary Neal's got them all around, and you know, they're going to have a good week of team bonding. They're all across the world, you know, they've all got international duties, and we'll hopefully see João Gomes, you know, against, maybe feature against England. But you know, these guys are probably going to come in back end of next week, just before the Villa game, and it's literally get over it, and you've got a massive derby on the Saturday. So, yeah, talk about all that, Keno.
Nice to set me up. Nice and easy, that one. Welcome. Yeah. The game management is such a... The timing of it's so bizarre, because I had a couple of conversations in the week leading up to the game about game management. I asked a question of Gary O'Neill about game management in the press conference on the Friday, and then the Saturday, that topic becomes such a major talking point for Wolves, and how they threw it away in such a negative sense. But my point, I think, still stands as a general point, though. I think Wolves' game management has actually improved this season in comparison to the last season or two, where we've seen a side that has dug in and invited pressure and thrown points away. Whereas for the majority of this season, there's definitely some notable examples, but for the majority of this season, Wolves tactically and emotionally, I think, have matured. Now, there's a lot of room for improvement, as you've seen with the Manchester United game. Obviously, this Coventry game being a major one as well. But I think I use that Fulham one in the middle of that as a good example of, yes, they may have conceded a last-minute goal in that game, but it was a game where for the last 15, 20 minutes or so, we were also 2-0 up and coasting and managed the game perfectly, and were really impressive, actually, at how they just shut Fulham down. And the goal meant nothing, really. It won't be getting a 98th-minute goal, whatever it was, and Wolves won the game. It's just a shame that they didn't show those same characteristics against Coventry, because you mentioned it there, Lamina giving the ball away. I thought he had a really poor game, to be honest, against Coventry. I don't think Gary O'Neill's tactics of playing him out wide worked, albeit it did work mid-game when he moved out there against Fulham. And he came back inside towards the end of that game and gave the ball away. Really uncharacteristic of him, but it was poor, and that led to what was the equaliser in the 97th minute. And for that equaliser, as you mentioned as well, Hugo Bueno goes from hero to zero. As much as I like Hugo, I think he's a good player. I think he's been really unlucky this season with injuries and Aitnouri doing so well. But he really dropped the ball there. I mean, his awareness, strength, emotional as well as tactical intelligence at that point.
It wasn't close to him, Keno. It wasn't close to him.
No, exactly. Really, really, really let himself down there. I know Doc is in front and then maybe gets dragged out of position slightly as well, but I think the vast majority of that blame does come down to Hugo Bueno completely losing his man. Obviously, there's other things before that, losing the ball, Lamina, the cross coming in the first place, but Sims only gets to that ball because Bueno is all out of sorts, and it's really, really frustrating that it happened that way. And then the winner is almost incomprehensible, isn't it? How that manages to go in. So, look, completely agree what you said. Coventry deserved to win the game. But when you get yourself in a position like that, you cannot throw it away. And it's criminal of a Premier League side to do it. And then the latter part of your question, I mean, moving on to, you know, they've got this week, obviously, and a load of internationals. And then they go to Villa Park, 5:30 kickoff on a Saturday night. And it's going to have all the makings of a big game. And Wolves have got to show up. It's quite interesting just to note that, obviously, all the players that are away on internationals, there's 10 senior players away. The remaining players have been given this whole week off, interestingly enough. They're doing individual sort of fitness programs from home, but they've been given the week away from Compton. And it's probably a bit of a nice break for them.
Mental break?
Break as well as physical, yeah, I think it's a good point. Now, some fans might look at that and think, oh my God, yeah, we've just thrown away a FA Cup semi-final and we're now going to give the players a week off. But I think it's something important to bear in mind. This decision would have been made long before that Coventry game was played. They'd have decided they were giving them this week off, whether win, lose, draw,
sure,
whatever.
Cool.
So
yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's a point that can be sort of thrown at them. But they probably do need it, to be honest. These players need a little bit of a breather. And hopefully they'll come back rejuvenated for training next week and back into it with, obviously, the internationals that come back second half next week as well.
You did feel like the stars had aligned, didn't you, from everything that they'd overcome this season, like I say, that almost to get to Wembley would be incredible. Gary Neil leading out this team in his first season at Wembley would have been almost like a reward, really, for everything that had gone on beforehand. And yeah, we're still going to talk about the league in a little bit, and they've still got a really decent shot, I think, albeit I still think they're outsiders, but a decent shot at getting European football. But to walk out of Wembley, that doesn't come around every season, every other season, every five seasons. You know, I think the 2019 was the last time they had that fantastic squad, that fantastic team. And a special moment, really, where, you know, when Nuno leading them out and just the fan base and everyone who was so united. It was an incredible day. And I think it's just, you remember still fondly about the day and before the day and you know, the majority of the game, I guess. And so to get yourself in that position when you're missing, you know, four out of your front five, when you're bringing on left backs instead to chase a game and right backs in Dock and Bueno with one of them scoring, and you know, you've got an 18-year-old, 19-year-old striker who's not having a great game, and then you've got to bring on an 18-year-old to replace him, and yet, you know, to get over the line, it's just it just wasn't supposed to happen, I guess, is what I'm saying. That wasn't the sting in the tail that I think anyone saw once they got over the impossible and coming back to win that game, or to lead in that game, sorry.
Yeah, and it was a sort of classic cup tie in that second half where there was two teams attacking and going for it, and it was a great advertisement for English football, great for the neutral.
Three out of the four games were brilliant, weren't they, for,
yeah,
for FA
exactly.
Cup. Amazing.
And just so disappointing that Wolves come out on the wrong end of it. Not meant to be. And that is the funny thing about football, is that sort of what you alluded to there. Next season, we could be talking about the same thing. Or it could be 20 years from now that Wolves... And that's what's almost half hopeful and half frustrating about it, because
for sure,
Wolves have got every opportunity next season, the season after, the season after that, to give it another go in the FA Cup. But easily, look at the draw, look within fixtures, whatever it might be, means that Wolves might not get there for another 10, 20, 15, whatever it might be.
So
frustrating.
And I think they'll have a chance to get there. But as you said in the podcast last week, Keno, you're never going to get a better chance than that. You're not going to get a better chance than beating Coventry City at home to get to Wembley. Very rarely will you get a better chance than that.
Absolutely. And that was where a lot of this frustration comes from. Mm. Because I think, you know, you could be 2-1 up. And against any team, I suppose, in that situation, it doesn't really matter. You should be seeing the game out regardless of who you're playing. But considering that Wolves put in such a poor performance against what was a Championship outfit, who, to their credit, played very well.
Mm-hmm.
But Wolves were bullied, outfought at times. I don't think it was a team from Wolves that didn't show heart. I think it was a team that showed, unfortunately, a lack of quality on the day, which has been unlike them. And that's what's most annoying about it and frustrating, because regardless of the throwing it away in the circumstances they did, it's as you're going into that game, as it's 12 o'clock, 15 minutes from kickoff, and you're expecting a big performance from this Wolves side, regardless of injuries, and it isn't that performance. That's what's so disappointing, because that opportunity is there in front of you. Look, as I say, you might get it next year, you might not get it for some time to come. But that's football. You've got to try and come back from it now. And that's not just in the short term, that's the long term as well. Go again. And they've got a lot of big games coming up. 10 games to go in the Premier League. Villa next up, away. And it's, opportunities to still make it a very memorable season, which, to be fair, it has been regardless of that result, because Wolves were not expected to be anywhere near where they are. And they're still doing a very good campaign. They just need to try and see it out now and not let it fizzle out.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's kind of the message that we want to speak about, is that it has been an incredible season. However, it's one of those where you're the victim of your own success, aren't you? If you go and fizzle out now, and look, they've got, I'm not going to say excuses, but they've got a lot of issues in and around the squad where this season could quite easily fizzle out. And you've gone from potentially European football in the league and a Wembley appearance to, I don't know, let's say, worst comes to the worst, finished 13th in the league, and you know, you're still comfortable and you've still got a decent points tally. It's still a really good season, if not a great season, but it won't feel like that. I can guarantee you now it won't feel like that because of what's happened in the last week and what may happen in the next 6 to 7 to 8 weeks. It won't feel like that. It should do. And the club will echo that, and we'll make sure that people realise that. And I think we will as well, because, you know, from where they were at the start of this season to where they are now is insane in terms of points on the table and where they've come from. But it won't, I guarantee it won't feel like that if that happens.
Yeah. Look, it really has been such a successful campaign in where Wolves have come from. But then there's that obvious disappointment. Victim of your own success is a great way to put it, because it doesn't matter whether Wolves win the league this season. There are going to be some people who are going to say, well, you know, can we win the Champions League next season? I think to take stock and appreciate where they've come from is difficult when you're so close to that little extra bit of extra special bit of success, and that is FA Cup semi-final or getting into Europe. These next 10 games really are massive, and particularly the fixtures they've got coming up, because beyond these first initial fixtures, they have got Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool, three of the last five, I believe, are those three teams. Mm-hmm. Going into that, the next five, if you will, Villa, Burnley, West Ham, Forest. You've got Luton not long out as well, it's thrown in there. You've got Bournemouth, obviously, which is going to be rescheduled. You know, there's six of these 10 games are, well, I mean, every game in the Premier League is winnable, but if you're going to look at it on paper, six of these 10 are games that Wolves can get points in and would aim to get points in. Villa, I suppose, is one of those where they're doing well and it's going to be difficult, but it's a derby, anything can happen. Mm-hmm. And then those other three, Arsenal at home and then away to City and Liverpool. You now need these next five games to go really well. Mm-hmm. If you're going to keep yourself in that race, to give yourself a bit of a buffer going into these final five. But this team's got it, you know, it's got it in them. I think they have that little bit of hope and faith. And if it doesn't work out, you then have to assess where Wolves are at and go into next season and attack it in the right manner, because there's a really good foundation here. They just need to maybe add a bit more to what is a bare bones of a squad.
Last take from you. What was your thoughts on Ball Boy Gate? I can imagine you being that kid, by the way. You know,
no,
give it the big un,
no.
Walking in, little bit of the little bit cheeky chappy, you know, flicking your hair away, doing it for the good of the team, and then all of a sudden you go back and you're a little bit sad, a little bit sulky.
No, not me at all. I'm a very respectful young man.
Have you ever done a ball boy? I've never done it, but I kind of wanted to do it. In fact, I must admit, out of all the ball boy situations that you can do, I've always fancied doing a bit of tennis ball boying. That's the one that you want to do. It's kind of cool, I think.
Oh, I could see you doing that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A little bit of Ralph Lauren.
I've never done it. What would be an excellent feature idea is if for you at this age now...
Oh, yes!
to go do it at Molineux for a game.
Make it happen, Wolves.
I tell you what, can you imagine? Would be remarkable.
Trying to squat down on one of those small seats. Oh, like, my God.
And it'd be like, Nathan Judah, 60, ball boy for the day.
I tell you what, Wolves, if you're listening, I would do it for the crack.
There's a great feature in that.
Oh, it's a great feature.
They've got to let us do it. That'd be absolutely superb.
Sat there on my little plastic seat, a day in the life for ball boy.
I'll be honest.
You're genuinely thinking about doing this and pitching it, aren't you, to the powers that be?
Yeah, but not me doing it, you doing it. it looks way funnier if you're doing it.
Can you imagine me walking out to the round the sides and you get you with your little plastic seat sitting there in front of the South Bank? Crikey.
The only thing that would be funnier,
yeah,
is if you were a mascot for the day.
Oh yeah, I don't think they'd do that now.
There's no way you'd be able to do that.
There's not a chance.
But that's
walking out, walking out next to Sarabia. You wouldn't see him. I mean, in front of him, you wouldn't have a clue.
Do you remember that one where was it last season or season before with the lads for a stag do and they got this bloke to
it's fantastic
to walk out and he was what in his 40s or whatever.
I think lower leagues you can get away with it. You won't get it Premier League but ball boy you could probably get away with potentially.
I think you know we know some people in high places. I think we could get you.
I reckon the highest.
You pitch it as a feature. There's a feature there, and you will get some pictures of you during the game in action.
Oh my God! Give me the ball back.
Okay, I will not name the powers that be, but the powers that be that listen to this, get in touch. There's a ball boy feature to happen here.
Oh my God! Can you imagine?
Please let this happen. Anyway, to answer your question. I mean, on the face of it, the kid's given some to Mark Robins. Mark Robins has given a little bit back, which some people would say is fair enough. Yeah. I think considering the kid is... I think there was reports he was about 13 years old, so roughly about 13.
Okay.
And Mark Robins, I think, is 53 off the top of my head. Maybe a bit out of order.
I've seen the video. I can't see the ball boy.
The video angle's not very good. You can't really see the ball boy's reaction, or you can sort of see the angle, but
he does it twice. Does it gives it the big, and then comes back, and then gives comes, it. So I don't know whether it's. I assume it's the first one where he's really in his face. I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it's. I don't think it's a good look. I don't think it's a. It was a good.
No,
move.
Terrible.
At the same time, I don't think it's disgusting. I think that was maybe slightly over the top, but I understand.
Yeah, were you surprised when Gary Neil said it was disgusting?
I was, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, I was down in the tunnel, going down to the mix zone, and saw Gary speaking to coaches of Coventry to try and get hold of Mark Robins to have a word with him about it. And he was clearly unhappy. It wasn't anything sort of out of the ordinary unhappy. It wasn't him sort of throwing a tantrum or scrapping anyone, but it was clearly unhappy about it. And I understand that. I completely agree that it's out of order. I was definitely surprised to see him phrase it the way he did. Mm. But I think also emotions get the better of all of us.
I think at the time... exactly right. I think they're obviously... devastated about the manner of the loss, and to be honest, I think it was probably a small, tiny thing that went off in the background. But because of the frustration and the magnitude, probably got added threefold, fourfold, fivefold, and I'm sure it was very frustrating in terms of the day. And I think that just all came out, didn't it? Really, you could tell he was hurting Gary O'Neill, hurting for the players, and I'm sure he was hurting himself.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a manager for. Not even two seasons yet. This is his second season, and he had an opportunity to get to Wembley. No, it's big for him as an individual as well as the club and the players. So yeah, he'll have been good. And I think there was a couple of things he got wrong tactically, as well as being hamstrung by the very limited options he had. But that's football. You've got to try and win with what's in front of you and what you've got. And the Wolves weren't good enough. Simple as that.
See, that's why you're improving in your podcast skills, Mr. Liam Keane, because you give nice segues and you say hamstrung. Well, yes, they are. Plenty of hamstrings kicking about. And we talked at the start of the week about injuries. If anyone hasn't watched it yet, the Keane and Judah show aired on a debut on Monday on Shots TV. And of course, you can watch it through our tweets, or there's a story on the site as well. Just click the link and you can watch that. And it's basically a 35-minute show. It's going to be between 20 and 30 minutes, so a quick show each week that you can see absolutely free. You don't have to pay for it at all. And it's just going to be really focusing on one subject, because, as you understand, in these podcasts, we have to go through a plethora of different opinions and options and incidents and previews and teams and sponsorships, whereas sometimes you just like to talk about one specific subject. So that gives us the chance at the start of the week to tackle a certain aspect, you know, whether it's injuries this week, whether it's, you know, the state of Molyneux the next week, and you know, we can really take a bit of a deep dive into that. So every Monday that will be, and that will be airing our, obviously on the expressandstar.co.uk /sport/Wolves, or of course we'll be tweeting it as well. So Shots TV and channel Freeview channel, what is it, Kino? Shots TV Freeview channel
276.
Oh, 276.
Very I think that's good. Right.
It was either 276 or 267. Let me have a look. Yes, 276, Kino. Love it. Love that. Love that. So, yeah, the injury update, of course, no injury update from Gary O'Neill before the injury update, which everybody knows afterwards now. Let's talk about, let's save the worst till last. So, very quick, because we've already spent too long talking about Coventry, but let's just go on to, I'll give you a name and you give me the latest situation, and then we'll probably just have a little bit of a when we can expect to see them back. Craig Dawson,
right, a little bit of quick fire injury stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So groin injury, missed last two games. He was 50-50 for Fulham and obviously missed that, and then Coventry as well. There's a hope that he will be back for Villa if rehab goes well. I would suspect with the amount of time he'd got before that game, they'd be fairly hopeful for that. So, yeah, Santi Bueno has done a decent enough, maybe not against Coventry, but I thought against Fulham he was very good. So, not the end of the world if Craig Dawson isn't back, but obviously, you know, you want senior options in the squad, so hopefully for Villa he'll be available.
If you get a week off, and I guess groin and hamstrings are a little bit different because maybe a rest is, you know, as good as from a rehab point of view. But if you get a week off and you're dealing with an injury, let's say, you know, or, you know, you're still working on it, Mateus Cunha, Craig Dawson, Bellegarde, etc. Do you still get that week off, or do you have to come in? You're like, well, if you're injured, you've got to come in because we've got to get you ready for Aston Villa or Burnley or West Ham.
Yeah, I suppose it depends on the rehab, because there'll be, for some of the more severe injuries, yeah, I'd imagine they'll still be going in to get some work on those, but it'll be sort of tailored work specifically with them. Mm. Obviously no team training, and then back off again. So yeah, it'll be a case by case basis as well for certain players, but players like Max Kilman and Totti and Nate Norrie and all these, well, obviously Nate Norrie and Totti are always, that was two terrible examples for me. Kilman being the only example there that made any sense. Players that have played every minute and been around and aren't on international break will have the sort of week at home, but also with tailored work to do while they're there, training plans, and they won't be sat around eating Doritos and playing,
not like me,
PlayStation.
You.
No, exactly.
I mean, when I was at Middlesbrough, they used to actually take some of the first team coaches with them on holiday sometimes if they needed to, or physios. You know, they used to obviously sort them out, and sometimes physios used to fly with players to go on holiday or to go for a break for 3 or 4 days so they can still get the treatment and do that. I don't know whether that still happens these days, but a lot of them have. And I think regular in regular football these days as well, they have sometimes their own people, don't they, as well, to help them or to go through certain stretches or conditioning work. I know Adama Traore had a different person, didn't he? He went straight to the gym in the afternoon. Or they never lifted a weight in his life, apparently. It's astonishing with that physique. But a lot of them, I think, have people that they can use if and when needed.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so much money in the modern game that you'd be
sports science game, yeah,
astounded by the amount of people and companies and money is involved in keeping these people, these athletes at tip top condition. So yeah, there'll be a lot of people involved, home, abroad, at the club, outside the club, and I don't envy the people that have got to try and weave that all together into something
and fitness centres and all sorts abroad. You know, you go, you still, there's a football pitch, there's always your training camps, there's obviously things that you can do and access, I'm sure that people will do. I mean, look, Portugal's a prime example, the facilities that we were in, weren't it? I mean, they were second to none inside there for the players. So I'm sure there's affiliations all over the place. And I wouldn't expect them to be going too far away, maybe home or Europe, but you're not expecting them to fly all over the world, do you, to go and see Taylor Swift in the Eras Tour?
Are you looking forward to that?
I can't wait, mate. Absolutely buzzing for that one. Right, so that's Dawson crossed off the list. Bellegarde.
John Rittner-Bellegarde, knee injury. Fortunately, not as severe as first thought. Obviously, whenever you hear knee injury, a lot of people think the worst, so luckily not the case. Obviously that was against Fulham, early parts of that, so it'll be almost 2 weeks since that happened. I think Villa will be very much touch and go. I know Gary was sort of slightly cryptic on he could be Villa, maybe not. I would head with Betts and say more likely to be the week after if all goes well, and that's obviously West Ham at home. So not too far for him. I know it's a 3-game week there with Burnley midweek as well, but not too far away. And that's going to be a boost as well, because albeit he's not been at his best by any means, you just need seeing your bodies back and more options to hopefully attack these last 10 games.
Hwang Hee Chan,
hamstring injury, 6 to 8 weeks when it initially happened, which was February 28th, wasn't it? At home to Brighton in the FA Cup. So I think you're looking at mid-April at the earliest. Forest game on the 13th, is that correct? But it could easily be the week after that. So somewhere around there, that's going to be sort of more realistic for him being back up and running and in a squad. If all goes well, obviously, with his rehab, and it's on the 6-week mark rather than closer to the 8-week mark. At worst case scenario, he's back early May and is back for the last 2 or 3 games of the season. But I think Wolves are fairly hopeful that it will be a bit sooner than that.
Mateus Cunha.
Well, luckily the best news of the lot of these 5. Mateus Cunha will be...
I mean, we were hopeful, weren't we, that he might have made the squad.
But I know.
Did you fear the worst... Well, he didn't give any updates on the Friday before Coventry, or were you more optimistic?
No, I felt that it was partly mind games, which I think it was, but also it clearly was because they didn't want to give the bad news of Neto, mm-hmm. which we'll come mm-hmm. on to in a second, mm-hmm. before the game, understandably. It's difficult to second guess. I didn't ever at any point think it was particularly positive that he didn't give anything. But it just left me a bit dumbfounded, to be honest. I wasn't quite sure where to go with it. Cunha not making it was not a major surprise, because he's already sort of ahead of schedule anyway. But he's back in team training. He's obviously not gone away with Brazil, which I think he would have done in the form he was in had he not got injured. And he will be, if all goes well, pretty certainly in the squad to play Villa, unless there's any more bad news over the next week.
Oh, don't.
You've got to say it. It's possible, but very unlikely. It looks like he'll be around for the Villa game.
Okay, and I'll save the worst till last in Pedro Neto.
Yeah, Pedro Neto, hamstring injury. The same injury that he suffered on his hamstring earlier this season, where he missed eight weeks until he got back in the squad, and then 9 weeks until he actually played from October to December. But it's the opposite leg, so it's happened to both legs in the same season, which is devastating for the young man. And he will be very unlikely to play again this season, but not impossible. I think if you're looking at around about the 9 week mark, 8 to 9 week mark, he gets back for the penultimate game of the season, which is at home to Crystal Palace. Or the final game of the season away at Liverpool. It just now depends on whether he can get back within the similar timeline, whether Wolves will risk him. Obviously, I think Wolves' European charge may weigh heavily on that as well. And then we also know that there'll be interest in the summer on him as well. So that will weigh heavily. So it'd be interesting to see where they go with him and how he sort of reacts to the rehab. I know that including this week, so there'll be 2 more weeks on top, but including this week, he's gone to Portugal for 3 weeks to do part of his rehab, which will be a partly medical decision, I imagine, but also partly a personal thing for him to get back and see some family. So he's over there now and has been this week and will be for another couple of weeks and then back in Wolverhampton to finish off the rehab.
Yeah, absolutely massive blow. And I said it on Monday, not only is it a blow in terms of the player and him missing for the football club for pretty much the rest of the season, and let's hope that he does come back, but also a massive blow for the returning big players, you know, the likes of Bellegar, the likes of Cunha, the likes of Hwang Hee-chan, because not only is Pedro Neto a huge thorn in the side of other teams and opposition because of how good he is and a threat, but also because he makes other players better in terms of, you know, keeping players away, you know, getting double teamed, letting players other players be open in terms of course, his assists. He's still one of the top assist makers in the Premier League. So you know, Wolves have got to find a new way of creating goals as well, because he's going to be not on the pitch for a considerable amount of time. It's a massive blow. And look, he's 24 years old, Pedro Neto. And regardless of what you say and the way that you spin it, Pedro Neto is an injury problem. Now, he is still probably, I would say, Liam, and you probably, I would jump in if you disagree, more likely than not to be sold this summer. However, does this injury derail a move, or does it derail the amount that Wolves would want? I mean, 24 years old, if you stayed fit for the remainder of the season, you continued on, you know, where you were going, the trajectory that you were going at, and the impact you were making in massive games, not just regular games at home against garbage opposition. Well, not garbage, but some of them are garbage. But, you know, you're playing in, you know, you go into the backyard of top six teams and dominating the game. Has that stopped a big club looking at Pedro Neto and offering the kind of money that Wolves will be looking for? Because that is his highest value. 24 years old, wherever he's going to sign, it's probably going to be a 5-year deal or a 6-year deal. It's the best years of his life as a forward, as an attacking forward. Your pace, your power, your skill, you're coming into the best years. Does someone take a chance on him? And if they do, is it to the amount that Wolves will want in the summer?
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts on a deal like this, because you've got the injury issues with him, of course. You've got his age, which is...
You've got to say he's injury prone.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've got no arguments there. His age, which is still a very good age, as you mentioned, they're 24 years old, arguably not in his prime yet, with a lot more to come, you would hope. Portuguese international, clearly from a talent perspective, incredibly talented, very, very, very good footballer when you can get him playing and keep him fit. And I think I made this point recently as well. I think there'll be a thought or a feeling from some of these top clubs and their medical teams that they can still get more out of Pedro Neto, which will, I expect, mean some clubs will still be willing to go there in terms of signing him and still willing to take what is, to some degree, a chance. Now, every transfer to some degree is a bit of a risk. I think with Neto, at the money you're talking about, maybe slightly more of a risk because of the injuries. But I think there'll be clubs that won't be put off necessarily from that. And then it comes down to the money, as you mentioned, because obviously we don't know the exact fee that Wolves are demanding. I would suspect it's in the 60 million range. Maybe 60 to 70 was what I had thrown out before. But will Wolves realistically get that for a player that's now struggling so much with injuries? At the same time, Wolves don't need to sell any of their players. They've got no necessity to let any of them go. But as we've heard from Matt Hobbs recently, speaking about the club strategy, they're willing to sell one or two of these starters, if you will, bring in big money and reinvest that money in the rest of the playing squad. You sell two, you bring in four or five players potentially, mm-hmm. whatever targets you move for and the fees they cost. So there's no necessity for Wolves to sell. I don't think there's necessarily a rush to let him go. But we know big clubs are interested. And if you're going to get the most money at the right time, this summer feels like it might be that opportunity for Wolves. But at the same time, he's on a decent contract till 2027. Wolves have got plenty of room to keep him for next season. They don't have to move. And there's other players that are being linked elsewhere because of how well they've been performing. So I don't think it's as cut and dry as to say he's more likely than not to go. I think genuinely it's more of a 50-50 because of these injuries now. I think it becomes a case of how many clubs make the jump. We know there's lots of them interested, but how many of them make the jump and how many of them are willing to make the jump for the fee that Wolves want, or how willing are Wolves to come down on that fee based on the injury issues he's got.
Yeah, it's one that's going to be a very interesting summer in terms of Pedro Neto, and I completely understand what you're saying, and it depends and it comes down to the club and whether what they see as a fee. I guarantee you that they'll get lowballed early on with this injury record. I guarantee you. But you say clubs, Liam, and you're right. Clubs will be interested and they will be hesitant. But you only need one club. You only need one club to take a calculated gamble. And maybe that still happens because there's one club that see the hesitation in the market, that see, oh, there's going to be two or three teams after him. Well, actually, we can get him for maybe slightly less than what we were budgeting for, and we can make this, you know, make this deal happen quickly. I would have thought that Wolves will want to, if they are going to sell Pedro Neto, get a deal done earlier than not. I think it's very difficult now for Pedro Neto. In fact, almost impossible that he goes to the Euros. So he is going to be around, and it's probably going to be one of the stories of the summer. I just wonder whether Gary Neal would prefer, I'm sure everybody prefers, to get the money in early on. But like you say, if they don't meet the needs of what Wolves want, then Pedro Neto stays at Wolves. However, the other option and the other situation is, yes, you're right, but if Pedro Neto wants to go and he makes it, he's never been a troublemaker, Pedro Neto, but if he makes it very clear at the end of the summer when he sits down with Matt Hopps, I want to move. He could push things. You've seen player power. We've seen, you know, things materialise very quickly because of the way certain players act. Now, this is no chance. I don't think there's any chance that Pedro Neto does a Mateus Nunes situation where he goes on strike and refuses to play and forces a move. But you could still sit down at the end of the season, I'm sure they will do, and he might say, look, I'm ready to go. I've done service here. I understand that it's been frustrating, but at the same time, I'm keen to leave Wolverhampton Wanderers. I want to go and better myself to a top four or top five club. And then it's interesting. I'm sure there'll be a middle ground that they'll agree on, and it's whether they get that fee or not. I wonder speak about this, but at the same time, just to add to that, I wonder if it'll help or hinder him in terms of his market value getting back before the end of the season, in terms of you don't want to rush it, but if at the same time, if you're Wolves and you want to get him in the shop window and obviously get him on the pitch to help you in the league as well, whether that's a good thing or whether it's a bad thing.
It's interesting more with the player power because, yeah, I would hope he wouldn't do a Mateus Nunes situation, but these things happen and clubs have to make decisions, and Wolves made one that sort of, I think, turned out for the better in the end, for the money they got and the players they were able to bring in because of that. But yeah, it's an interesting one to keep an eye on, especially because Matt Hobbs has made it very clear publicly that he doesn't want to stand in the way of players that are getting big moves. If Liverpool or Arsenal, two clubs that we know like Pedro Neto, if either of those come in and offer, I don't know, let's say 58 million.
Yeah.
That becomes a real question then for Wolves. Is this enough? Mm. Is this enough money? He's got injuries. Pedro Neto really wants to go.
Yeah.
There might be a part of Matt Hobbs and the recruitment team, who, by the way, will be working on replacements for every player, regardless of whether they're close to leaving or not. Do we allow him to have what would be a big move for him, to go to a big club and have chances of playing in the Champions League and fighting for trophies? There's a very good chance that they say yes and they allow him to move. So I think there's that to take into account as well. Interesting with the last point you made as well, because I think for a player wanting to make a move and wanting to, especially if you're going to make a move from a club like Wolves into potentially a Champions League club, you want to keep yourself in the limelight as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that is us talking about them, media, national media talking about the player.
Yeah.
And that comes down to the
player. And who's his agent?
Well, I don't know. I wonder. George Mendes, of course, who will be doing everything he can to put his name out there. Don't worry about that. But it's interesting because for this to materialise, clubs will be aware of how good a player he is and then have him on a list. And that sort of analysis and coaching and scouting of a player doesn't go away, but to have a player who is in the conversation, a public conversation, being spoken about on social media, a player that's out there and people are talking about, generates excitement, and there's plenty of clubs that aren't as well run as Wolves that follow fan excitement and will occasionally jump at signing a player because it's not just because of this, it doesn't just boil down to this, but it plays a part. Because fans on social media are talking about this player and how excited they are. And they were already interested anyway, but they think, well, do you want to make the fans happy and bring this player in? Or do you want to bring this one in who no one's heard of and he plays for some Belgian club and no one's ever heard of him? Now, that player could easily be a better player, but there's a lot of times some of these bigger clubs aren't as well run as Wolves are. I think that plays a big part. It's about the player having their name out there. So I think from a Pedro Neto point of view, he would want to come back and play, not just because I think he wants to help Wolves, but because he wants to be spoken about. Mm-hmm. He wants to have his name out there. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame him. That's how you get career progression in a ruthless business like football.
Yeah.
You have to keep yourself out there and relevant. Relevant is the key word. And I think if you can do that, regardless of performances or not, then you've got every chance of getting yourself a move.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of the stories of the summer. I genuinely do. And I hope for everybody, most importantly, and being selfishly Wolves, that he does come back, because those last two, maybe three games, Liam, and we'll soon find out when this Bournemouth game is going to get rearranged, but could be the difference between European football or not. You know, let's be positive here. So let's hope that he is back. Let's hope that he wants to get back. Let's hope that he is back, and let's hope that he's flying, because that's only going to help Wolves going forward and potentially Pedro Neto if he gets that move in the summer. I understand before the January transfer window, he was on record, wasn't he, saying, "I'm not going anywhere in January." But that wasn't pulling the wool over our eyes. Like, I'm sure that he was quite happy with being linked in January, but I don't think there was... I think we would have been absolutely stunned if he'd left in January. But we all knew, really, that the case was that he was looking for potentially a move in the summer, and that was more realistic, and it's just a case of whether that materialises or not. I'll give you a keen or not keen. Ready?
Hit me.
Okay. Keen or not keen, Wolves sell, and this is... I'm not talking about agreeing the fee, I'm talking about the actual fee. Wolves sell this summer Pedro Neto and João Gomes for a combined £85 million. Keen or not keen?
Well, thank you for the offer, Mr. Banker.
Okay.
Little deal, no deal reference there.
No deal. Ooh.
Not keen.
Not keen. Not keen. Not even thinking about that.
I think that's
not even thinking about the offer.
I think that's too low. I really do. Okay. Let's break that down. 85 million. What if you were to break that down? Is that what?
I'm gonna be honest. I think Pedro Neto's market value, as we speak, isn't, because of the injuries, Liam, I would not be surprised if we're talking in the fives.
So if you say it's 55,
okay,
you're saying that João Gomes goes for 30 in that deal, that 85.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's way too low for João Gomes.
So what are you valuing João Gomes at now?
Well, there has been talk today of Manchester United, lots of rumours, Manchester United looking at a £40 million deal for him. Obviously, clubs are going to be interested in him because he's a top player. I think, now there'll be obviously a lot of fans who will say £80 million, £100 million. I don't think you're there, but mm-hmm. I think he's a player who's only getting better. I don't think he's at his top value yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to sell him this summer,
yeah,
bearing in mind he's not at his top value, I don't think. I think there'll be more to come from him.
A season away from his top value.
Yeah,
or six months away.
I think you're looking closer to 40, 45 mm-hmm. for him. And I think at top value, I think he goes for big money.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? And just, again, going full circle to what Matt Hobbs has had to say. And they are predicting it's not going to be an incredible market this summer in terms of crazy fees anymore. And with everything that's gone on this season, with points deductions, with a lot of different financial aspects, they're expecting the market throughout England and Europe to be down maybe, let's say, 20 to 30%. These crazy fees are not going to happen anymore. I just wonder whether they might get affected and whether they're pushing at a certain fee and maybe... the money that's going to be around this summer is nowhere near as much as maybe what we have seen previously, and whether that may affect what Wolves do transfer business-wise.
Well,
I think a lot of teams are becoming a lot more astute and a lot more savvy with their money.
Yeah, the point that Mahomes is making there that you were alluding to was, I don't think there'll be a lot of the sort of £100 million players that Chelsea have been throwing around fairly recently in recent transfer windows. And I agree, to be honest. I don't think clubs will be as reckless with spending for obvious reasons. But from a Wolves point of view, if you aren't able to bring in, let's say they sell no one, they sell on no one of that's generating big money. Let's say all of those main key players stay and go into next season, which, by the way, is not a bad thing. It's great that Wolves are keeping all their best players as well. They're in a position where they can do something signings-wise, but they're not in a position where they can spend a lot. So there might be small transfer fees, there might be loans, because they're just not in the position for next summer where they're going to be able to spend as freely as they probably would like to, mm-hmm. without generating some money to reinvest. So it's a tough balancing act, because do you sell one player for 60-odd million, which is what Matt Hodges was talking about, and reinvest, and you bring in, for losing one player, you might bring in two or three good Premier League players.
Yeah.
And that is probably, arguably, what Gary O'Neill needs. Even if you are losing one really important player, you do need that two or three player extra on top of what he's got for the squad. At the same time, there's no guarantee these players work. There's no guarantee that every transfer is going to be a success. And then you lose a player that was playing and performing so well. Mm-hmm. It's a really difficult balance. I think if I was to analyse and have an educated guess at what I think would be the most successful outcome for Wolves, it would be that they sell one player and reinvest that money and are able to bring in slightly more additions for a strength in depth and a slightly bigger squad than what they've got without losing too many of their key players. Mm. I think that would be a good middle ground for where the club is at and where they want to go.
And supplementing that, I guess, with some periphery players as well and selling those, it's... I can't believe we're already 45 minutes into the show. It's insane. But it's a fascinating aspect this summer, and it's one to watch. So I think that it's important that we discuss in a little bit of detail. In terms of those periphery players, Liam, I'm going to give you a player, and we'll both maybe have a number in our head, and we can both say what we think. I'll leave you. You can have the first player, I'll have the second, you have the third, and back and forth of players and market value who you think Wolves would accept this summer. Gonçalo Guedes.
Wait, you want me to give you a fee?
Give me a fee.
Oh. Bought it for 27.5.
Christ.
Had half a season.
We could have given us 10 million each there, and he still would have been bad value at 7.5.
I'll take 10 mil.
You wouldn't be doing this podcast, would you? At 10 mil in your back pocket?
Absolutely. It's tough to call. I mean, Wolves would obviously love to get as much of it as they can, but let's say, I don't know, 15 maybe. He's still a good age playing in European football. You might even get more than that, but I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to say 12, and I'll be happy at 12, to be honest. But we shall see. So Daniel Podence has got a 5 million euro fee that Olympiacos can trigger. Is that correct? I know he's hitting headlines recently.
That has been reported. Do you know where that's been reported from? Has that been come from abroad?
It's Kiam Lean, apparently it's come from.
I don't know who that is. Because I'm not.
He signed a 1 year extension, didn't he?
He did.
When he left. So would that be something, a fee that, you know, whether that's been agreed or not? And like I say, maybe we'll try and find whether that's a firm offer or not. But do you think that would be a number that Wolves would part with their player if Gary Neal doesn't see him in the squad and involved?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, at the time of reporting, I don't believe there was any mm-hmm. any buy. But let's say that figure, if we were to analyse that.
It's about 4 million quid, 4.2 million pounds.
It's probably about, I know he's 28.
Yeah.
He's at a decent age still, but he has gone back to the Greek league, which, no offence, is not, you know, the top of the European leagues.
That's garbage.
So, yeah, I think that's probably roughly about right. Yeah, I think so.
Fabio Silva.
Yeah, again, there's been reports to suggest 15 million would do it. Wolves are going to, if he does go for a fee similar around that, it would have to be with, you know, lots of clauses and add-ons and different things involved to up that
fee. But you'd want 15 million up front, would you?
Would I take that? I think I probably would, yeah. I think so. I know you've spent 35 million on him, but he's had a couple of loans, some fairly decent, some maybe slightly more average, but it just hasn't worked out in a Wolves shirt, and that would be probably good enough money to take the hit on, really.
I think if you're asking 15 million plus add-ons, Liam, I think it'll be with Wolves next season. I can't see anyone spending £15 million on Fabio Silva. I can't, genuinely.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I think there's clubs that would absolutely take it. There's no doubt in my mind at all. There'll be clubs across Europe that would take him, but are they taking him for that fee? I don't know. Yeah,
it's frustrating for everyone involved, isn't it? And I don't want to keep coming back to this, but let's be honest. Regardless of what's happened, and 90% of the things they've done a great job with this season, regardless of what's gone on, if Fabio Silva was still here, he would have been playing regular first-team football at this time. It would have been through a bizarre situation of injuries, but Fabio Silva would have played. And maybe not. He might not have made the difference, but in these last few games, I mean, look, they got past Fulham, didn't they? So without him, but you just feel that if he was available and he'd be getting that run of games, it would have been almost like a last chance saloon, wouldn't it? Maybe I'm sure Gary Neil's given him that last chance saloon many times, and that's why he's in playing in Scotland and not here. But there is that last little feeling at the back of my mind of what could have been with what's gone on and what went on Saturday. But again, maybe that's easy for me to say.
Yeah, hindsight is 20/20, isn't it? I mean, they didn't need him at the time he wanted to go, and then all of a sudden, you need him. It's ironic, isn't it? But it's just the way it is. I mean, look, Sasha could not have left on loan and then might not have got injured and might be starting against Wolves as well. It's just one of those.
Oh, exactly. One of the two. I mean, probably more Sasha, especially against Coventry City. I actually think that a fit Sasha Kalajic in the Championship would be a brilliant striker, by the way. I'm not going to say a transfer for him because I think it's almost certain that he'll be with Wolves next season because of the injury, right? No one's going to buy him.
Yeah, he's going to be out till New Year pretty much, isn't he, I think?
Yeah, so, you know, he's going to be with the club regardless or not. Rehabbing, and we wish him all the best. Right, kettleandtoastman.co.uk. Keno, you've got a brand new house. I saw your background, which was incredible on Monday as we were filming because it did not have a coat hanger or a coat rack behind it. There was nice and crisp walls. It was clean. It was white. It was brand new. What do you need? Give me it. Appliances, floor care, personal care, catering, cookware, outdoor living. Oh, let's do it. Have you got a patio? Have you got a little bit of garden?
Yes, we've got a really nice big patio space at the back.
Oh, lovely. Right. So, shall we go for a BBQ then? What would you like? Oh. Would you like a barbecue, or would you like a smoker grill, or would you like an Apollo light burner with a little bit of heat?
I'd like them all, but I think I'll go barbecue, you know.
Okay, let's go barbecue. Okay, here we go. Oh, or pizza oven.
Oh. I might have to go pizza oven. You know?
Oh, it's got pizza oven. He changed it. Mind. Okay, how would you like... This is smart, by the way. I mean, I'm not... This is nice when I click on it and if it comes up. Not coming up at the moment. Great news. So here we go. The Tower pizza oven with paddle and carry bag. This is like a little mini portable pizza oven that you can stick on the top of your barbecue. Convenient storage and easy clean, authentic homemade pizza. Oh my goodness, it's fantastic. Built for durability, temperature gauge. Unique pizza box oven sits on top of your barbecue grill, using heat from the barbecue to cook authentic pizzas in minutes. Create your pizza flavor sensation straight from the barbecue. The pizza oven even comes with its full-size pizza paddle. Oh, don't mind a paddle. You can use a paddle inside and outdoors, Keno. Making it easy to delicately move your pizza in and out of the oven, baby. How much for a paddle that can be multi-purpose, baby?
Well, pizza ovens aren't cheap.
No.
Especially high quality, like we have.
Five left in stock, by the way. Five left in stock.
Only five, crikey. Mm-hmm. It's got to be like 170.
Honestly, I thought it was going to be in and around that. Less.
Less. 120.
Oh, baby, half it.
Half it?
Half
which
it.
Which is?
Oh, 60 English pounds to you, me, and the 11 to 12,000 people listening. 60 quid, but there's only five left. So five into 11 or 12,000. Get yourself there. KettleandToasterman.co.uk. Right. Questions from the beautiful people. What are we on? 59 minutes. Okay. Here we go, Mr. Liam Keane. I love the fact that I tweeted these questions and didn't really say what we were doing. And I've still got 53 of them here because we love it. First question is from Sophia. It says, losing to Coventry would have been psychologically damaging for the players. Do you think Gary O'Neill has got what it takes to keep the momentum going and still end the season on a high?
Yeah, I think that Gary O'Neill and the players have earned enough trust this season to back them. I do. And particularly Gary O'Neill. Like, I don't think he's got it wrong on too many occasions. I think there was a couple of times early part of the season, I think tactically, with a couple of decisions, albeit hamstrung by injuries, maybe got it wrong against Coventry. But yeah, I don't think it was... I don't think he's got it wrong too many times. And I think with that, there's enough left in this squad and that sort of siege mentality going forward. I think they're mentally been pretty strong for the majority of the season, maybe slightly emotional, but they've I would still back them. They've got something left in them to give, I think.
Slightly emotional. I was totes emosh on Saturday, mate. Totes emosh. Needed a hug. Well, we were hugging. We were hugging in 95th minute.
I know. We couldn't believe it beside ourselves. And then I went to the pub afterwards to have a couple of Guinness to console myself.
Well, you went to the mix zone first. That was successful.
Yeah, no, it went well. Yeah, no, mix zone was always...
loads of players stopping for you.
Yeah, no, lots of them avoiding even walking near me.
I heard you were interviewing the players and they were all standing in line waiting for you to finish so they could just do one after the other. they were just all waiting patiently.
I don't even know where to go with that. Not even close to speaking to anyone, sadly.
Would you speak, do you think, if you were a player? Let's say, I mean, I know it's difficult, but you say you were put yourself into the body of a professional footballer, and it's a physique, by the way, and you just got beat by Coventry, you're going through. Do you have any empathy for journalists and do an interview, do you think? Because, I mean, you are a little bit selfish, so I'm just wondering what you would do. Would you walk straight down the tunnel? Would you give an excuse? Would you say hello? Would you not make any eye contact and just walk straight through? What kind of person are you?
Yeah, I think I would love the attention, to be honest. So I'd be stopping.
What, even when you just got beat?
I don't care. Just be stopping, chatting, having a bit of a laugh. Yeah, I think it'd be perfect.
Really?
Why not?
Okay. I think I'd be finding a different route to get out the back of
the air. I think you're the nasty kind of guy that you wouldn't even look him in. You'd be like, they'd be like a bit of gum on the bottom of your shoe. You'd just be... spitting at them as you're walking past. Scum. Who are you?
You're right. Vicky Lawton, do we think Chiwomi has now jumped above Fraser in the pecking order? He looks more mobile and more to the Gary O'Neill style of play than Nathan Fraser. I didn't on purpose bring up Fraser at the start of the show. It was a befuddling performance from him, and I don't want to dig him too much. He's a 19-year-old kid, and I think he's had a brilliant start to his Wolves career in terms of, you know, what he's done in the first team. At the same time, he was out of his depth on Saturday. I don't know what was wrong. I don't know whether it was maybe the occasion that got to him, maybe the pressure, maybe, you know, the talk of, you know, him and the praise he'd been getting, and maybe he'd put too much pressure on himself. But he wasn't quite there on the pitch, I don't think, and was lucky to come out at half-time, I thought. Leon Chiwomi came on. I thought he did pretty well, Liam, to be honest. Has he gone above Nathan Fraser? Let's add context here as well. There's a very good chance, Liam, that Mateus Cunha will not be starting. There's a very good chance against Aston Villa, which means that Nathan Fraser or Leon Chiwomi could be leading the line at Villa Park a week on Saturday.
Yeah, the short answer is I think Nathan Fraser is still certainly ahead of him in the pecking order. I'd be very surprised to see, you know, a half an hour performance from Leon Chiwomi, who I thought did okay. I wouldn't say he did more than that, to be honest. I don't think that's going to push him ahead of Fraser, but I do agree. Fraser was out of his depth, struggled against Coventry, and just looked leggy, looked unfit, didn't look ready. Yeah, might have been the occasion, might have been the fact he's come back from injury. But I would hedge my bets to say that he will start at Villa, Fraser. I'd be surprised if he didn't, to be honest, considering the options they've got available.
I'll give you the keen or not keen from last week. Keen or not keen, Nathan Fraser scores over 1.5 goals, Premier League goals this season.
I don't remember what I said last time.
I know what you said.
I said keen, I think.
You did.
I'm going to stick with it. There's no point. Okay. I can't change my mind after a week.
Okay, okay. Andy Matthews, has Pedro Neto played his last game for Wolverhampton Wanderers?
It's a really tough one. I'm definitely not convinced with certainty to say either way, but if you put me on the spot, gun to my head, I'm going to say yes.
Keane, you mean?
Oh, I'm going to say, you can just edit this, can't you? Yeah, nice one. I'm going to say Keane.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to say not Keane. I'm just reading Andy's question. Again, it didn't say Keane or not Keane. I just put Keane on it, Keane into it. Okay, interesting. So you think he won't play again for Wolves? That's really interesting. I think he's still got some time for Wolves. I'm not including next season. I think he will go in the summer, but I think we might see him back before the end of the season. Let's hope so. It's a good one for debate, though. Gareth Hicks, taking into account the financial resources at their disposal, can you rank our last five managers on their achievements? Wow.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. Gareth Hicks.
Tough question.
Wow, tough crowd. Let me write these down quickly. So who we got? So we got, I assume we've got Jacket, Nuno. Oh,
no,
are we
is it better
Kenny Jacket or not? We're going to Zenga?
And is it better? No, if you're doing last five, is it better to work?
Lambert?
No, work the other way. It doesn't make any sense to do it that way because you're not going to be able to count upwards.
Okay.
So Gary,
I'll tell you what, I've gone through a few managers here. I'm just trying to think of my time. I mean, helping you lot. Go on then.
Gary O'Neill.
Yeah.
Lopetegui.
Yeah.
Bruno Lage.
Yeah.
Nuno. Lambert. That's five.
Okay. That's five. Okay. Let me just put a 5-1 here quickly. Okay. I've done my 5-1.
Okay. Let me see if I've got the same as you.
I don't think you will do.
Nuno top.
Nuno one.
Yeah.
Nuno, I was going to do 5-1, but it's fine. You give the big answer first.
I'm going the other way. Yeah. Nuno top.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Lopetegui second.
I've got Lopetegui second too. I know he spent a lot of money, but the way that it finished was salty and poor, and we've dinged him enough for it, and I agree, and I will continue to do that until the day I die. Disgusting what he did in the summer, really. Bang out of order. However, regards to the money they spent, what he did with that club, who were sleepwalking to relegation, was still an incredible job, and I think you've still got to always remember that.
Yep, I agree. I agree. Okay. And because of that, because Wolves wouldn't be in the Premier League without him, that's why I've gone with him there.
Agreed.
Then go with Gary O'Neill.
Correct.
Then go Bruno Lage.
Correct.
Then go Lambert.
Wow, can't believe we're agreeing. Love it.
Spot on, mate. Spot on.
Love it. Keen or not keen? Oh, this is actually a keen or not keen, says Stuart. Wolves get less than £28 million for Fabio Silva, Daniel Pedence and Gonçalo Guedes combined.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I'm going to say not keen. I think they get slightly more than that if you are to lose all three and move them on. But that is obviously a big if because you've got to make sales and have clubs to take them and take them on the right deals. But okay. I think if you in an ideal world, I think Wolves could get more than that for the three.
Okay, I'm going to say keen, actually. I think that I'm not including add-ons here and certain, you know, Fabio Silva will get another £5 million if he goes on and plays 30 caps for Portugal and scores 20 goals, you know, ridiculous add-ons. So I'm going to say keen. I think they get a little bit less than £28 million, actually. Michelle says, what are your thoughts on Nottingham Forest reportedly trying to drag Wolves into their PSR saga? Seems a case for sour grapes to me.
Yeah, one of the most bizarre stories of the week.
Yeah, go on.
Really, really strange. So, yeah, basically, in the sort of written reasons with Forest obviously getting a 4-point deduction, they'd mentioned Wolves basically claiming, without any evidence, that had Wolves not sold Ruben Neves in June last year, they'd have breached financial fair play themselves, which, from a perspective of how the financial years work and the fact that
yeah.
Wolves do their accounts up to May 31st and he was sold in June, doesn't sort of fit. So I think from a Wolves
maybe that's why they're up SHIT Creek, maybe,
well,
because they're not doing that. That's the conclusion.
So yeah, from Wolves' point of view, just a bit confused really as to why they were mentioned. I don't think that it's much more than that, but But yeah, just a strange sort of desperately trying to get themselves out of the woods comment, really, that doesn't really bear any relevance to Wolves and shouldn't really bother anyone that much, but it's just a bizarre thing to do, really.
It is crazy, though, and just off on a tangent very quickly, like, can't be doing this every year, like, oh, you got a point deduction and there's an appeal, then this goes down and then there's another point deduction and there's another club. And like, if you're battling at the bottom of the table, like, you don't know whether you're coming or going. I mean, this is livelihoods of people, you know, and staff and players and fans. And it's just insane that it's being played out in public like this. And, you know, now we're waiting for Everton's new deduction, if there's going to be one as well. I mean, it's just insane if you're like, you know, Luton or a Burnley and, you know, and you're scrapping at the bottom of the table and you don't know whether you're coming or going. You've got no idea. Must be mental.
It's really bizarre. Really bizarre
how it's been done. And even, you know, the figures and the fees and the different points. It's like, honestly, like, I think it's an absolute mess.
Yeah, I really do. I'm just glad Wolves are not involved.
Absolutely. Rich says, might be reading too much into it, but I don't know if you noticed Mario Lemina's body language on Saturday. Head was constantly down and shrugging and throwing his arms around a lot.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, don't sort of watch the game probably as much as fans do in that sort of sense, because we've got so much going on with our jobs. But I did notice it a bit. I didn't think, from what I saw, it was as often as you're saying in the question. But I'm not sort of, that's the reason I mention that is because you might have seen it more than I do for obvious reasons with me working. So I'm not saying that it's not the case. But I did notice it a bit. And a little bit uncharacteristic of him, but I thought that he was a bit frustrated with how the game went. I think frustrated with his own performance and the fact that he was struggling and it didn't really work out for him on the left. Obviously, then gives the ball away for the equaliser. So, just a bad day, really, for Mario. I don't think it's anything to read into sort of long-term. Just disappointing, really, that it didn't work out for him or the team.
Yeah, I think it's just, honestly, I'm giving Lemina a pass here. I think that probably, you're right in what you say. I think he was probably frustrated about the performance and also his own performance. It wasn't vintage Mario Lemina, and that might have a lot to do with him playing out of position as well for the majority of that game. And it didn't work out for him. And it wasn't just him, by the way. There were quite a few senior players who didn't have a very good game against Coventry City. I didn't think Mats Kilman had a great game. I thought Pablo Sarabia was very poor as well. There were a lot of players that I think that maybe when they needed to look to the senior figures in that game to really stand up and be counted, I feel like a lot of them did not at the time that they were really needed. And I think maybe, you know, sometimes you've got to give credit to Coventry, but I thought that Mario Lemina was probably frustrated in his own game and the way that the situation was going at that time. But I'm not going to dig him too much on here. Stocknomist says, is Gary O'Neill's approach to one-off cup games at fault? Ipswich fail from 2-0 up. Of course, we were there, weren't we, Keno? Coventry fail from 2-1 up with a few minutes left to play. Too keen to manage games when, especially at home, he should let the players off the leash. I don't buy the tired excuse. Wolves play 28 games this season compared to Coventry's 37.
At the same time as making those two examples, you can say that Wolves beat Blackpool 5-0. They beat Albion. They beat Brighton. They beat Brentford over a replay in the FA Cup. And that's with coming back from 1-0 down with 10 men away from home initially. So I don't think the argument sort of stacks up, to be honest. I think, to your credit, I do understand the point of where you're coming from, in the sense that maybe Wolves have overthought games at times and over... I don't want to criticise anyone for working too hard on a tactical game plan. I think that's an odd thing to do. But I do think that Wolves maybe have made it more convoluted than they've had to at times. And that maybe plays into that slightly, but I do think Wolves' game management has been better, bar a couple of the examples that we've given. So, no, I don't think it's necessarily a long-term thing for Gary to work on, but I do think there's still improvement to be made there, and he'll know that, the club will know that, the players will know that. There's an evolution for this team to go through still. It's not by any means the finished article, and that's unfortunately means you're going to have days like that occasionally, and it just came at the wrong time for Wolves.
David Flavel, if Noah Lamina is from Paris Saint-Germain, he must be decent. Why has he not featured yet? Surely he should have got a chance against Coventry.
Yeah, he's 18. He played once for Sampdoria in the second division of Italy on loan, first half of the season. He came to Wolves basically sort of not in the right physical condition to be playing any football, let alone Premier League football. He's played for the 21s a couple of times. If you think that's someone who's ready to play against Coventry in an FA Cup quarterfinal, then I'm glad you're not the manager.
Oh, whoa, Keane!
He's definitely not. I mean, he's getting closer, don't get me wrong, and I would like to think that we might see him at some point between now and the end of the season. But just because he came from PSG does not mean he's ready to go in and play that game. I know people get very excited because he's a young player and you've seen a couple of YouTube compilations of him, but no. It would have been a crazy decision to play him against Coventry. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you came from Walsall, and that doesn't mean to say you're ready to go and report on Wolves, is it?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm absolutely useless.
John Charlesworth, will our season completely unravel like it did in the second half under Bruno?
Oh, don't be so negative. I understand why you're asking it, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
depends what you say. What does unravel mean, though, Liam? Does unravel mean they finish 12th or 10th or 11th? I mean, they're 9th at the moment. Does what does unravel mean?
Well,
if unravel means they lose eight out of the last 10, then I think that's unlikely. If unravel means they lose half the games and maybe win 4, lose 5 and draw 1, is that unravelling?
Well, I
and
think
don't make Europe?
From a fan point of view, supporters now want to be a push for Europe, and I think anything sort of significantly below, I mean, if you miss out by a point or a goal or whatever it is, then I don't think that is, but if anything significantly below Europe or in and around the European race, I think it's probably categorised as unravelling from a fan's perspective. And compare it to that season under Bruno. So that was the 21-22 season. Obviously, Wolves were genuinely in the sort of Champions League race at one point, which was insane. We all remember the three games in February. Two within the Thursday and Sunday. Lost to Arsenal 2-1. They went 1-0 up in that game. Went to West Ham, lost 1-0. Then the following week, lost at home to Palace 2-0. And that felt like it sort of got away from Wolves. And all of a sudden, they beat Watford 4-0. They got a couple of the wins, beat Villa in there. They got some of the good results. They threw that game away at Leeds. Remember, they lost 3-2 there, which was a crazy game. And after beating Villa, they went into the final seven games of the season and lost 1-0 to Newcastle, lost 1-0 to Burnley, both away, lost 3-0 at home to Brighton, drew with Chelsea 2-2. That was the game that Connor Cody scored a last-minute equaliser. Lost 5-1 at home to City. That was Kevin De Bruyne's moment at Molineux. Drew 1-1 with Norwich. And then lost 3-1 to Liverpool. So out of those seven games, drew 1-1 with Norwich, drew 2-2 with Chelsea, lost the other five. And that's why Wolves ended up finishing 10th that season.
Yeah.
Now that is exactly what unravelling is, as the question says. And that is what Wolves need to now avoid. Ironically, they've got Villa. I know it's not the same amount of games left after they played Villa, but they've got similar amount of games left with Villa this season playing them at their place. And if they go and beat Villa and then lose the rest of them, I don't think any fans are going to be happy. So it's all about consistency. They've got an opportunity in front of them, as difficult as it is, and they have to try and stay consistent, try and pick up results, particularly in this first half of these 10 games where they've got a lot of opportunities.
Just to let you know, Wolves are still very unlikely to get European football in terms of the bookies. Like, they are 8-1 to finish in the top eight this season. That's still a massive price, isn't it? So the likelihood is that they won't, but I agree with you that I still think that you want, as a fan, to at least be in the mix with maybe three or four games left, and that's going to be the big, I guess, push and the motivation that Gary Neil will be instilling into this club when he gets them back before Aston Villa. And let's be honest, being in the mix for Europe in a top eight spot doesn't mean you need to win every game. Like, if Wolves win there, the games that they should do, or the games in and around them and below them, and lose, you know, to Manchester City and Liverpool and maybe even Villa, they're still going to be in that mix. Doesn't, you know, they can afford to lose games because they're not drawing a lot. But yeah, they're 8-1. West Ham are 4-1. Brighton are 3-1. Newcastle are evens, which I think's, you know, with Botman's out for 9 months now as well, and their trajectory is on the way down. Chelsea are 2-1 on, and they're two or three places below Wolves. I know they've got obviously a big squad and stuff, but you know, there's still a bit of value. But what I'm saying is the bookies don't think that Wolves have still got a chance of European football this season. But I think that that's probably a decent price. Would you say?
I think so. Lump on.
Oh, mate, my Ryan Aitnori was looking good for a minute.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
that. 20-1 shot.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't come in for you, just so you didn't win.
Wow.
I'm joking. I'm
That's
joking.
Insane from you. I'm That's joking. Insane.
Oh, dear.
Oh, this is interesting. Nick Olgolcher. Was the Borough media guy responsible for Gary O'Neill standing up a Sky reporter back in the day for which the reporter still apparently holds a grudge? I think he's got this wrong, actually. Did you see this come out, by the way?
I did, yes, I did. I was meant to send you and I forgot.
I don't think it was the Borough media guy. It was a journalist there when... and apparently he said that... it was bizarre, wasn't it? It was almost like a lump on. Well, I'm not surprised Gary O'Neill had an interview with him. He sent a camera crew and a journalist on a 6-hour round trip, and they had to come back the next day, etc. It was a bit of a bizarre attack, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just thought this about what 20 years ago.
Yeah,
but it bears no relevance. Individuals can do good and bad things within a lifetime. It bears no relevance on the on his criticism of Mark Robbins. It was a bizarre comparison, to be honest.
How realistic is it, says Simon, next season the likes of Kundal, Hodge, Yersa Mosquera and Chiquinho are integrated into the first team to give the squad more depth and give them first team minutes?
So Hodge, I think, is, albeit there won't be a decision made, I think is likely to go. I'll have reported at the time that in January that Bristol City and Stoke were after him in a £2 million deal, and Stoke ended up taking a loan deal in the end. So obviously it's still a decision to be made, but likely that he moves on, probably on a permanent deal. Hodge will be interesting because he's clearly liked and he's got opportunities, and I think he's done well, but then needed to go on loan for minutes. So he's a big question mark. It'd be interesting to see what happens with him.
Sorry, did you say Kundal there? Because I thought you said Hodge at the very start.
No, I said Kundal.
Are you sure? Okay.
I'm pretty certain I said Kundal.
Okay, okay.
You might listen back to it and say that.
So couldn't really expect to not be there. Okay, got your Hodge.
Hodge. Yeah, as I just said that. But it'd be interesting to see what happens with him, because it could go either way, that one. Mosquera, I think, is
could
very
be sold loan or keep, you mean. It could be either of those three.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so many decisions to make, really, on whether Wolves are bringing in another midfielder, where they're at with the options they've got, whether they lose anyone. Hodge is someone they like and has done well, but he wanted to go and play. He wanted to go get minutes, and hence why he left on loan. He could have stayed and not played as much because they've got options in midfield. So, yeah, it's a tough one. Mosquera is almost certainly going to come back. Wolves really like him. Gary Neal really likes him. Borrowed accounts, he's doing quite well out on loan again in Spain. I think he's going to be a good player. So, I think very likely to come back in. And then Chiquinho is a really interesting one because he's obviously had that serious injury, was out for a bit. He's done really well on loan. Over in Portugal for the majority of his time there so far. I think there's potential there. It's a tough one with him because he had some really good moments when he first sort of burst onto the scene for Wolves, but he's very raw as well. So I'll leave that one a bit open as well, because I'm not quite sure where that will go. And I think he needs to get in front of the manager first to have a look at him.
Okay, how many more questions do you want? 1 hour, 20 minutes in.
Let's go.
5, 3 or 1?
3.
Okay, 3. You really wanted 1 there, didn't you? But you had to be nice. Okay, let's have a look. You can only keep 1. Pedro Neto or Ryan Ait Nouri? Who do you choose and why?
I think I keep Ait Nouri, you know.
Because he's got more chance of staying at Wolves for longer?
I think he'll stay at Wolves for longer. I think he's obviously a couple of years younger. I think there's a good high ceiling there with him. I think under Gary O'Neill, I think you'll get more out of him long term, and I think because even despite the injuries, you'll get more money for Neto this summer. All of those combined, I think you let Neto go if you to choose.
Andy Bowen says, "Can we shift the goalpost for the barbecue? I'd say anything above 10th, and then we should be well pleased. Maybe we could downgrade the food choices to cut costs and to suit Kino's basic tastes."
Yeah, what's that about? Basic tastes?
Are you basic?
No,
you're a little bit basic.
No, I thought some excellent choices. I thought with the food.
What's your go to? What's your supermarket near you?
I go to Lidl.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Basic. You're not happy about that, are you?
I went to Lidl once with Spears on a European tour. I was a bit disorientated, to be honest. I don't know. I just felt a little bit weird.
Lidl's abroad. We went to one actually as well, didn't we? Remember, we went to one in Portugal or Spain.
Oh, we did, yeah. I lost that receipt, you know, for expenses. We spent 150 quid in there.
That was bad, that. Lidl's on the continent are a bit more chaotic, I think.
Oh, okay. They're a bit more organised here, are they?
I think so, yeah. I mean,
I don't think I've ever been to a UK Lidl. Definitely haven't been to a UK Lidl.
Sometimes you can get a bad one or on a bad day and they are a bit all over the place. But no, I use it. I think it's good.
Okay. Remember when I just note to myself, don't eat the finger food at Kino's housewarming. Okay,
wow.
Last one from The Wonder of Two. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the saddest and 10 you've accepted it and moved on, how do you feel about last Saturday?
Well, considering my friend who's a season 2 holder at Coventry has still been messaging me stuff and he sent me something today during this podcast that I haven't opened. I'm going to say 6.
Okay. I'm a 3.5. But I'm hoping for next week's show, I'll be above a 5. I'll be fine. Good discussions, Kino. Enjoyed it, mate. Got to go. We'll be back next week, of course, previewing the big one against Aston Villa. Hope you enjoyed it. Wipe away the tears, Judah. Get on with it. We'll see you next week. And remember, on Monday, the Keen and Judah show should be there for episode 2. From me, from Kino, have a great weekend. Take care. Bye-bye. Because we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton. We're on